This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
And a very good afternoon. Welcome to Sports Talk 870. I'm your host, Earl Robinson, and I'll be with you until 2 o'clock discussing sports with you. So just give us a call at 355-9527 or toll free. Call us at 877-9527-870. And our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Very glad that you're with me this afternoon. We're going to talk a wide range of sports today. We're going to talk with Tom Hugger. We're going to talk a little bit of hunting and fishing this afternoon to start the program off. Later on in the show, we'll talk with Fred Heumann to talk about the upcoming World Series with the Tigers. But first off, let's bring in our good friend Tom Hugger. Tom, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, good, Earl. Good to see you. How are you?
Oh, doing good. Now, I haven't seen you in a while. We haven't had a chance to talk very much. And I wanted to have you on and talk a little bit about fishing here in the fall in Michigan. How is fishing going this fall? I know people have to change some of the things they're doing, but how is the fishing this year?
Well, we've had a pretty good season, Earl. In my case, I've kind of put the fishing rods away, and I've taken down the shotgun because I have bird dogs, and they don't want anything to do with fishing after Labor Day. But I'll tell you what, for the guys that are out there fishing, the fishing is good. And what's interesting about the fall is if you're looking for a wall hanger, you want to put something, a mount, you know, on your wall, a trophy fish. The best time to catch them is in the fall. And that's because there's less fishing pressure. It's also because those fish have had all summer to eat and pack on the weight. Plus, they're getting ready for winter, so they're loading up. And, you know, your fish never weigh more than they do in the fall unless it's a spawning female in the spring.
So this is the time whereas you want to catch the big ones. I guess this is the time. Fall is the time to catch the big ones.
Well, it is. You know, there was a new state record set just a week or so ago on Lake Belair, I believe it was, up in Antrim County, a brand new Great Lakes muskellunge record. And if I've got the facts right, I was trying to get online here, Earl, so I could check this, but I believe that muskie was 59 pounds.
Wow.
That's a huge fish. It had a 29.5-inch girth, and I forget how long it was, close to 5 feet. Somebody's real proud of that fish. There's a photo. Go to michigan.gov/DNR, and I think you'll see the photo of the fish and the details about how they caught it. But the key is, see, they caught it in the fall. You don't catch big muskies like that. I mean, you do, but if you really want a record, a wall hanger, go in the fall. That's when they're huge.
Now, when you catch big fish like that, do you have to be concerned about what they've been eating? I mean, you know, we've had so many stories about the water and pollution and all that. Do you have to be concerned, or do you have to look for certain things in a large fish if you got it?
Well, the State Department of Public Health publishes a brochure that lists all the action areas in the state. There are some spots where there are concerns of eating certain kinds of fish, certain size of fish. The problem with big fish is they tend to be old, and those fish may have some pesticides. Muskellunge in particular in the St. Clair River or Lake St. Clair, you get a 25, 30-pound muskie, that's a 20-year-old fish, and he's probably got something in his viscera, and it's probably some kind of carcinogen or whatever. But nobody eats those big fish anyway. In fact, if you really don't want to put it on a wall, let it go because it'll spawn or make more. And the other thing is, you know, you can get a replica made. You don't have to kill the fish. Take a picture, measure the girth and the length, weigh it if possible, and, you know, let the thing go and get a replica made out of balsa wood or styrofoam. A lot of guys do that now, and you don't have to kill the trophy fish.
Okay, well, that sounds good. Now, what about, I know from I haven't fished much lately, but I remember from my days of fishing, carp is always a good fish to catch. I mean, they give you a good reel, a good ride, give you a reel, a good ride. But they're about, I know they eat everything off the bottom of the lake. So is that another one that you really have to watch for? Or I know we used to have to clean them, clean out the insides for sure when we could catch them.
Yeah, well, a couple thoughts on that, Earl. First of all, when you're cleaning fish, fish have what's called a mud line, or it's a lateral line down along the side. And even when you go out to a restaurant, you order salmon or whitefish, I always turn that fish over, and if there's skin on it, I pull the skin away, and then I take a fork or a knife, and I scrape away that so-called mud line. That's what makes a fish taste fishy. Any fish is going to taste better if you remove the mud line. And as far as carp go, carp are very good eating fish. They're a delicacy in Europe, of course. When they were introduced to this country, 100 and some years ago, people automatically labeled them a trash fish or a rough fish. But I tell you what, carp like clean water too. And the Grand River, for example, has some huge carp in it. I have a friend who calls them freshwater bonefish because he catches them with a fly. And he says they're real hard to stalk. They're very intelligent fish. They're hard to get close to. And if you get a 20-pound carp on a, you know, a fly rod, you better hang on because it's going to be a runaway tarpon. Those things fight like crazy, and they're lots of fun to catch, and they're very, very challenging to catch.
Yes, they are.
Of course, if you want to eat them, you can eat them too. But you might want to check that state advisory, especially for big carp, because there are areas in the state where there are concerns about possible pesticides in the fish.
Okay. Now let's talk a little bit about hunting. As you say, you're ready. You're out there hunting now, and I know the DNR keeps a close eye on hunting. So what is going on in hunting right now, especially when you're searching for some game, or is some games more prevalent than others?
Well, in a word, Earl, everything. Everything's going on right now. The pheasant season just opened last Saturday. I haven't heard any reports. Michigan pheasant hunting has fallen on some pretty tough times in recent years. I think the harvest last year was something like only 27,000 birds. Oh, my word, 5-10 years ago, it was 200,000. And if you go back to the 60s, it was over 1 million pheasants. So our pheasants are hurting, and that's an issue of habitat. We could talk about that in detail if you want. But other seasons going on right now, of course, the duck hunting season and goose hunting seasons, and you want to check the state regulations on those because they vary according to the zone of the state and also to the species. I am a lover of grouse and woodcock. I have the English setters, and I have a yellow lab, and they love to hunt birds. And this has been a fantastic year, Earl, for woodcock. I've got to go back to flush records of the 70s and 80s to find the kinds of flushes that I'm experiencing this fall. I was out a week ago Monday, and three of us had three dogs. We hunted 2 hours, and we flushed 34 woodcock. And that's just amazing. The reason why there's a good woodcock population is the birds haven't gone south yet. We've had warm weather, and they're finding plenty to eat in Michigan, especially with the rain we've had. And so they eat earthworms, essentially, and other invertebrates. And they're just hanging around, and the season's going on for a couple more weeks. Grouse season, rough grouse season, is also open. Our flush records are about equal to last year. When we're focusing on grouse, we are moving 2 to 3 per hour, which is considered average. If you add woodcock to that, though, we're up to 6, 7, 7.5 an hour, and so that's kind of a bonus. But those species in particular, of course, we have cottontail rabbit season going on until the end of March. We have squirrel season. Now, there's an under-harvested species in Michigan, our fox squirrels. Few people hunt them, and yet we have literally millions of fox squirrels. The season goes, I believe, till the end of the year. I don't think it closes for deer season, firearm season. I could be wrong. Again, you want to check the DNR hunting regulations, and they're online, michigan.gov/DNR, and all that stuff is right there in front of you.
Okay. Now, you mentioned pheasant. Now, what about with pheasant? Is there not enough pheasant being grown, or are they leaving the state? So what's happening with pheasant?
Well, they're not going anywhere, including they're not increasing in numbers. The problem with pheasants is multifaceted. It's essentially related to habitat. You know, if you look at aerial maps of southern Michigan in 1950, it looked a whole lot different than it does now. Now we've taken down the fence rows. We're going fence row to fence row farming, huge cropping operations. I live in Ionia County. I know two farmers, one of whom farms 4,500 acres. That would have been unheard of 50 years ago. And another is farming 3,600 acres. My gosh, those are, you know, you're talking townships when you talk numbers like that. And it's just not the same. There's just, we don't have the small farms with the small fence rows that were brushy. We just don't have that kind of habitat. Our habitat has changed, and what covers we do have tend to be young forests now in southern Michigan, and also lots of brush. And that's good for some species, like wild turkeys, but it's not conducive to pheasants. And bobwhite quail are in worse shape than pheasants. I mean, we used to have those too. Southern Michigan is at the northern end of the range for the bobwhite quail. They tend to be a southern bird, but we do have them, but not in large numbers. And so it's real distressing to me to see the pheasant population go down the way it has. What can we do about it? Well, Pheasants Forever is a conservation group that has chapters in several Michigan counties. They're our best hope, working with the DNR and trying to, you know, get habitat restored so it's conducive to pheasants. But even that has been a mixed blessing. In areas where the habitat is intensively managed, we've been able to bring pheasants back. But for the most part, we're losing them more and more every year. There is a new initiative by Pheasants Forever and the DNR, and it's identifying three or four prime areas of pheasant cover in southern Michigan and then working intensively to make those showcase operations. Now, these are 16-square-mile areas, and there's one up in the Bay Area, you know, in Thumb, I should say. There's one down in Jackson-Lenawee County area. There's a third one. I'm not quite sure where that one is. But that's sort of the best hope right now. I mean, we can do it. We have the prescription. The question is, do we have the will of the people? Are there enough landowners that will band together and want to do something for pheasants? And that's the hard sell, is the political will.
Okay. Now, we know that as far as that people, a lot of people, as you know, sometimes in the past we've done this show, people, you know, there are certain people that just don't like hunting at all.
Right.
Just don't like to talk about it. I need to find out today, if you go hunting, you like hunting, are there limits on each species that you can only catch so many? How is that working? You have to find that out from the DNR, I assume.
Yeah, it depends on a species. If you're hunting pheasants, the limit is 2 birds. If you're hunting woodcock, the limit is 3 birds daily, 6 in possession. Rabbits, I think it's 5. You know, it depends on the species. There are some animals, however, that have no close season, like foxes and coyotes. You can hunt those year-round. You do have to have a small game hunting license, but there's no limit on those. Red squirrels can be hunted year-round. Starlings are open game year-round. Chipmunks, I suppose, are too. I'm not sure. I hope so, because I caught a few last summer. Yeah, these things are all managed by our Department of Natural Resources. Even though the game may be on your land, it's owned by the state. And so they have the right and the responsibility to establish seasons and bag limits.
Okay. 19 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR.
Weeks before cantaloupe from a Colorado farm killed dozens of people last year, a food inspector gave the company a near-perfect score, 96 out of 100. But that inspector wasn't from the FDA, but from one of the many private companies the FDA uses, and Bloomberg News links some of them to the food producers they're supposed to inspect. I'm Neil Conan, who keeps our food safe? Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up at 2 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Thanks for joining us. I'm Scott Pohl, and here's the weather. Our high is 73 today, with a good chance of rain and thunderstorms. Rain and thunderstorms are likely tonight, too, with a low of 60. We'll start out mostly cloudy Wednesday, then turn mostly sunny, the high 75. Windy and mostly sunny with a high of 74 Thursday.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527, or toll-free, 877-9527-870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday, 1:05 to 2 o'clock, right here on WKAR. Our guest this afternoon is Tom Hugler. We're talking hunting and fishing with Tom. And if you have any questions, just give us a call with your questions on hunting and fishing with Tom Hugler. And Tom, you just mentioned to me EHD. It's a sickness that's going on in the deer population.
Right. That's very much in the news, Earl. EHD, I'll try to say it correctly. Epizootic hemorrhagic disease, EHD. It's a situation caused by a gnat that bites deer, and the deer can get sick. There's a virus that's transmitted. It's not injurious to humans at all. and it's not contagious, but it is affecting the deer herd in certain parts of the southern lower peninsula. In the area of Ionia County, for example, around Lyons and Muir, it's not far from where I live, there's been a lot of deer found dead, typically along streams, because what happens is the disease causes deer to get very thirsty, and so they head for the river bottoms. So along the Maple River in those two little towns there, Lyons and Muir, they've been finding quite a few dead animals. Also over in Barry County, I have a friend with 40 acres. He's counted 17 dead deer on his property. Now, the question is, how widespread is this? DNR, by the way, wants to know, if you're finding dead deer on your property, contact your DNR district office, or you can call the Wildlife Division here in Lansing at 517-373-1263, 517-373-1263, and report any dead deer on your property. It's a landowner's responsibility to handle the carcasses, take care of them, or just allow them to decay naturally. Again, it's not a contaminating kind of disease. It's not going to affect the meat. You can still eat the venison. However, it's probably going to impact the hunting this fall. Now, bow season just opened on October 1st. I'm seeing deer in my immediate locality. A friend hunted there Sunday and saw 14. But other areas, I understand people are seeing fewer deer. How big is the problem? The DNR does not have a hard handle on it. Their last number I heard was perhaps as many as 4,000 deer statewide to date. That number could change and probably will change. Once again, though, if you're finding dead deer on your property, report it to the DNR at 517-373-1263 or call your local district DNR office.
Okay. One of our callers called in with a question for you. He wants to know, how would you approach bluegill fishing?
I approach bluegill fishing with lots of finesse, Earl. I had my kids out on local lakes a lot this summer for bluegills. Oh, my gosh, they're a wonderful little fish. I call them the piscatorial pancake, you know, the little fat little bluegills that are so good to eat. How would I approach it? Well, in the fall, you're going to be finding bluegills moving more into the shallows to feed. In hot weather, they're in, you know, deeper water. This summer, we were finding them on spawning beds in the middle of August, which was a true anomaly. Typically, they spawn in May, right around Mother's Day, and it's a lot of fun to sneak up on the beds. What you're going to catch, hopefully, are the males. You don't want the big, fat females full of eggs. Let them go. But the males will guard the spawning beds, and they can be really feisty and lots of fun to catch. You can use surface baits like a fly rod popper, if you will, or little spiders, little fake things that, I know guys that tie just a bare hook with a little sinker and a piece of red yarn and throw it out there, and the males will rush it because they're territorial. But in the summer, you want to go a little deeper, and crickets, gray crickets, are an excellent bait for bluegills. And if you happen to be in Lenawee County or down in Hillsdale County where there are lots of catalpa trees, catalpa worms are very good bait for bluegills, I'm told. I've never done that myself, but I understand that's the way to go.
I guess I should ask you, following that up, what are some of the best, I know minnows are good, but what are some of the best baits to use in catching fish?
Well, you know, as ugly as they are, a leech is about as good as anything. Of course, anytime a fish sees a leech swimming around, or it's particularly a night crawler. I remember Michael McClelland, who's a great walleye fisherman, telling me one time, I was interviewing him for a story, and I said, Mike, I said, how come walleyes hit night crawlers so much? And he said, well, you know, they're not a natural food for them. They don't live in the water. They live in the earth. So he said, the first time a walleye sees a night crawler, it's going to have a hook in it. And I thought, yeah, you're right, you know. And but they are good bait, and but I personally, leeches are excellent. If you can get small ribbon leeches, not the bloodsucker leeches, the little one, they'll still try to attach to you, but they're not going to rip you open and, you know, suck your blood dry. But you hook those things right through that little sucker. And let me relate a story to you. I was in the Upper Peninsula a few years ago, and a fella had been reading my stories, and he said, Hugler, you think you know a lot about bluegill fishing. I'm going to take you out and show you something. I said, okay, good, you know. So I met him at the boat launch early in the morning. This is on a lake up in Marquette County. And we were there before dawn, and we sat in a parking lot, and he watched the lake surface with binoculars. I said, what are you looking for, loons? He said, no, I'll tell you later. And I found out he was looking for bluegills that were feeding. He was looking for little bubbles out there, which were indicative of bluegills feeding, eating something before it rose to the surface and turned into a fly and flew away. And so we crept around very quietly, using a lot of stealth, no motor, just a canoe paddle, and quietly got up to one of those areas where the water was bubbling. And he hooked a leech on my hook, and he said, cast it out right there into those bubbles. And I did, whammo, 9-inch bluegill, whammo, 10-inch bluegill. I mean, we just caught a limit of those things on ribbon leeches. And I thought, how in the heck can a fish with a tiny little mouth the size of a garden pea take in a leech that's 2 inches long? Well, believe me, they can do it. And the big ones will. And they're so good to eat and so much fun to catch.
And that's good. Tom, I know I need to ask you, because this is from I guess, one of my own personal issues. I was up up north, or up in the UP last year, and actually the summer, the last couple of summers when I was up there, I went searching for a boat for someone that I could, you know, rent a lot of people up north rent the boat so you can go out fishing. I thought the prices were extremely high. What can you tell me? Where should I go, or how should I go to get a reasonable cost if you want to go fishing out on in Lake Michigan or somewhere like that?
Earl, the best advice I can give you is buy a boat, man. They are expensive to rent.
Yes, they are.
If you can find somebody to rent you a boat. Years ago, you used to be able to go on local lakes, even around here, Lake Lansing, and somebody would rent you a boat, usually the bait and tackle shop dealer or the local marina.
Yeah.
But, you know, the liability... It's the insurance liability of these folks that make it out of sight. You might as well buy your own. Now, having said that, what I would recommend you do is find a lake where you want to go fishing. You've heard it's great fishing. And find out if you can rent a cottage or a cabin on the lake. And then see if they'll put a boat at the dock for you. You know, they'll include that. Let that be part of your negotiations. Those folks have boats, and they'll probably loan you one if one doesn't already come with the cabin or the cottage. So that's a good way to go. On the other hand, you know, there's lots of used boats for sale now, Earl. I picked up a beautiful boat last summer. It's a John Dory 1985. It's restored. It's a lap strake model out of fiberglass, so it looks like wood. And a guy who restored it just did a beautiful job. It was sitting in a marina in Ludington, and weeds were growing out of it. The trailer was rusted, the tires were flat, and it's a piece of junk. But he knew it was a valuable boat. They don't make John Dory's anymore. This one was made in 1985, one of the last ever built. So he kept bothering the marina operator, and the guy finally sold it to him. And he spent 2.5-3 years rebuilding this boat, put it in beautiful condition, put a 25-horse Mercury on it, sandblasted the trailer, repainted it, new tires, put an electric bow-mounted trolling motor on it, fish finder. I mean, I think it's slick as a whistle, Earl. And didn't you know I bought it? And he sold it to me. And the price was right. I was stunned at what I had to pay for it, half of what it would have cost new. And here it was perfectly restored. So there's deals out
lucky.
There. I was very lucky, yeah. You bet. I had an uncle in a furniture business, I think.
Hey, we're talking with Tom Hugler, Hunting and Fishing. If you have a question for Tom, give us a call at 355-9527 or toll-free 877-9527-870. And our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. We come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. So give us a call. We're talking hunting and fishing. If you have a desire to do either one, or are contemplating getting out, either on the lakes or going hunting, are there many people, Tom, going in, are getting new hunters and more people going into hunting these days? We know the fishing is great around the state, but sometimes that population for hunters, it goes up and down. So.
Well, it does. And the trend in recent years have been fewer and fewer hunters. The one bright spot were women. Women were coming into the sports a lot more, and that's thanks to programs from the National Wild Turkey Federation and the NRA, and right here in Michigan, the Becoming an Outdoors Woman program, which is handled by our Department of Natural Resources. But in the last numbers I saw, Earl, there was an uptick. More people are hunting and fishing. And I think a lot of that has to do with the effort to get youth involved in this state. We now have a youth mentoring program. So kids that are 10 and under can hunt, provided they are with a licensed adult and provided they have passed the hunter safety certification course. Now, this is small game hunting. Deer hunting is still, they have to wait. I think, I'm not sure the age limit on that one, but for small game, they can. In fact, my 10-year-old daughter just took the class, the hunter safety class, and I took it with her. Boy, did I have my eyes opened. There were questions I could not answer, and I've been hunting and fishing my whole life. So it's a tough course, and the people that taught it, this happened to be over in Ionia County, and boy, they did a nice job. Steve and Harold Rich were the instructors, and was just delighted at what she learned and what I learned right alongside of her. And you know what, Earl? There were 80 people in that class, and at least half of them were girls. And that was really eye-opening to me. And there were also about a dozen adults taking the class. The youngest kid in the class, as near as I could tell, was 7 years old, and the oldest was, I think, 48. He was a guy that just had never taken a class and wanted to take it with his son, just as I did with my daughter.
Okay. I've got another question in from one of the callers. They wanted to know, they have changed the rules for muskie fishing. Do you know why?
Well, no. I'm not sure what those rule changes are, Earl. Do you have the caller on the line? Can we ask him?
Nope. They just hung up.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Well, if he's talking about Lake St. Clair, that's the muskie capital of the world, by the way. That the muskie fishing in Lake St. Clair is phenomenal. And the rules down there, the last I knew, a muskie had to be at least 40 inches before you could take it. Well, that's a big fish.
Yes,
that's an old fish. And the idea was to keep the breeders out there and let these fish continue to spawn and thrive. If he's talking about some other rules, I'm not familiar with those, but that, again, would be in the Michigan Fisheries Digest, michigan.gov/DNR, and you can call up any of those that technical information, you know, and he can probably find his answer right there or in the directory itself. If he has a copy, Meyer, everybody has those things. So, and they're free.
Okay. Hey, what about Asian carp? I know there was talk about them threatening the Great Lakes, and I know they put up a lot of different deals to slow them down, or hopefully they're not in the lakes. Have you heard much about or going on with Asian carp?
Well, it's a real concern, a huge concern, Earl. They're not far from Lake Michigan in the Illinois River, for example. There's not much stopping these fish from getting into the Great Lakes. And also in Lake Erie, I think the Maumee River is one that we want to keep an eye on. They have found DNA of Asian carp in Lake Erie, and all that says is the evidence is there for the fish to be there. They haven't found the living live fish. You know, believe it or not, I had a dream on Asian carp the other night. I dreamed somebody caught one and all heck broke loose. I won't go into the details of the dream. This is hardly a psychotherapy session, right? But it's that kind of concern, or a lot of people are worried about it. And unfortunately, our federal government is not stepping up and, you know, they want to take charge of a lot of things in our life, but why don't they take charge of Asian carp? I mean, this spills across state lines. And you know what? If they get in the Great Lakes, it could easily shut down a $2, $3 billion industry a year, and it could wreak that kind of havoc. So I don't know anything more than that, except it's they're knocking on the door, so we better keep them out.
Yeah, they are dangerous, that's for sure. They must have some awfully sharp teeth, I assume.
You know, I don't know, Earl. I've never seen one. There are several strains. They're ugly fish. They're big fish. And there's one species, I think it's a big head carp, that does a lot of jumping out of the water. And when you get a school of those things and they panic, it's like a stampede of buffalo. They start flying out of the water, and they literally can knock people out of boats and cause all kinds of havoc. So this is a fish that's a problem in the water and a fish that's a problem out of the water, Earl.
Hey, now, we talked about, like I was telling you, about fishing, but what are... what is the boat, as far as, like, if you want to buy a boat, how is the boat to market on boats today?
Well, it's excellent. You know, the recession put a lot of people out of business. A lot of boat makers went out of business, and so there was a lot of stock. It's just like the housing market, Earl. There was a lot of inventory to sell through and move through and get rid of. Now, there were some excellent deals on boats in the past 3 to 4 years. Now, what's going to happen this year at boat shows is real, real hard for me to predict. I can tell you that boat sales are coming back, just like RV sales are coming back. There's an old saying in RVs, and it may well apply to boats too, that they're the first ones out in a recession and the first ones back when the times are good. In other words, you start seeing layoffs in the RV industry when the economy turns. When it comes back, they're the first ones to hire back. And that may very well be true with the boating industry as well. I don't have my finger on that pulse per se, but from what I gather, it's pretty good, and it's only getting better. It's kind of like the housing market.
And Bay, I guess I should ask you, how is the fishing rod industry? How is that going these days? It seems like that's going pretty well, or is it?
No, it is going well, Earl. And what I like to see is the cost coming down. I mean, yeah, you can spend $1,000 on a graphite or a bamboo rod that somebody handmade and spend all summer doing it, but you don't have to. I mean, there's some really good value out there. I bought rods and reels for my kids, and these were not junk. They were combination rod, and I won't mention brand names here, but they were under $20 a piece, and they worked just fine all summer. Now, you know, I may throw them away one day. They're not going to last forever. Yeah. But you don't have to spend an arm and a leg to get outfitted with this sport. There's still some really good prices.
Okay. Well, hey, Tom, I want to thank you for coming in. It's been a pleasure having you on with me today and talking hunting and fishing. We'll keep time for just a couple of more minutes. So if you have a question, give us a call at 355-9527 or toll free 877-9527-870. And our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. We're coming away Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on WKR. Is there anything else you'd like to add, Tom, while you're still here with me?
Well, just want folks to be safe. The biggest and best of all hunting seasons is coming up November 15 with the firearms deer season. Again, I predict we'll have a harvest statewide that's a little less than normal, and that's because of the EHD problem we discussed. But if we get some good weather, I hope we have a real good deer harvest. And want everybody out there to hunt safe, hunt smart, and enjoy the great outdoors. That's what it's all about, Earl.
Okay. Hey, thanks, Tom. I think we got a call or two coming in, and we'll take those, and then we'll let you go. But
okay.
It looks like a call or two is coming in right now. He's on the phone trying to see if someone wants to chat with you, and we'll get those up with you shortly. Hey, give us a call right here at WKAR. Call to talk with our guest, Tom Hugler. Hey, Tom, tell us right now. I mean, you told me that you're writing for three articles for three different magazines.
Right, Earl. I've cut back quite a bit. I'm writing for a Pointing Dog Journal. I do a column there called Eastern Encounters, and it involves pointing dogs, you know, Brittany's and setters and bird dogs that point birds. That's a bi-monthly, so I have a column in there six times a year. Shooting Sportsman is another magazine I like to write for. I have a column called To the Point. It's the back page column, and that too is a bi-monthly Shooting Sportsman magazine. And they also are online now. And then the third one, of course, is our good old Woods and Water News. A lot of your listeners get that. That's Michigan's most popular publication. It's a big tabloid, and I have a monthly column in there called Michigan Meanders. So I'm still alive, still busy, still writing, still enjoying it all, Earl.
Okay, got a caller for you. Hello, you're on the air with Tom.
Hey, how you doing today?
Good, how you doing?
Good show going on.
Well, thank you.
I've got two questions. One question is, how is the restocking going in Lake Michigan for the salmon and lake trout and what have you? And secondly, has there been a determination on the amount of deer that were killed in West Michigan through that fly?
Yeah, I'm going to give you some sketchy information because I don't have those figures right in front of me. The stocking records are doing fine as far as I know. I haven't checked those in recent years. But in Lake Michigan, of course, they stock many ports with salmon and steelhead and even brown trout. And I think those numbers are holding up quite well. Now, over in Lake Huron, it's another story because of the food base over there is out of kilter right now. And I think stocking records are less now than they used to be. As far as I know, Lake Michigan is still up and doing fine. Regarding the number of deer killed with this EHD disease in West Michigan, the DNR does not have a good handle on that. Again, the last number I heard statewide, and this is southern Michigan, including your area, but also the southeast, was about 4,000 deer, which isn't a whole lot of deer when you consider the statewide herd is over a million or around a million. So it could impact, it could be more than that. And we just don't know. That's why DNR wants to know if you have any on your land. Have you seen any dead deer in your neighborhood?
No, I have not. But I have seen several deer in my backyard.
Well, as long as they're on four legs and moving around, they're in good shape. It's when they get that fly that they some of them get sick and die.
Well, that fly bite. We had that frost and cold weather probably kill those flies off. So whatever deer are going to be dead are probably pretty close to, if not have already died.
I agree there. The frost will allegedly kill the gnat that carries the virus. On the other hand, we've got some pretty warm weather right now. It was 61 this morning when I got up, and they're talking 74 tomorrow, so we could see a resurgence. I don't know. It's something to keep an eye on, though.
Okay, thanks a lot. Okay.
Yeah, thank you. And Tom, thank you for joining me. It's
You're
always
welcome.
A pleasure talking with you. And you know, we'll have you back on again and talk some hunting and fishing.
Okay, Earl, you have a good fall. Good to see you, my friend.
Good to see you, too. Thank you. That's Tom Hugler, our guest, talking hunting and fishing right here on AM 870 WKAR. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR.
Adults often struggle with the burdens and responsibilities when they have to take care of a parent or a sibling. When that role of caregiver falls to children, it can be almost impossible. I'm Neil Conan, Children as Caregivers, plus rethinking that staple of higher education, the boring old lecture. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 3 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
There's a good chance of rain and thunderstorms with a high in the low 70s today. Showers and thunderstorms are likely tonight, too, with a low of 60. Wednesday will start out mostly cloudy, then turn mostly sunny with a high of 75. Windy and mostly sunny with a high in the mid-70s Thursday. This is Scott Pohl.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527, or toll-free, 877-9527-870. And our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. Remember, we come your way Monday through Friday from 105 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. If you've never called us before, we ask you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons. Call us up. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. Well, you know, the World Series starts tomorrow, and the Detroit Tigers made it to the World Series. A lot of you didn't think they would make it to the World Series, but they made it to the World Series, and they're going up against San Francisco. Two good teams. You know, when you get to the World Series, you just have to look at it that you got the two best teams in baseball, and that's the Tigers. Or sometime the team will sneak in, but it may not be the best team, but they get hot at the right time. So how would you look at the Tigers? Do they get hot at the right time? Because they were always in the pennant, you know, the pennant race all during the year. They were there. They were close. And they won enough at the end of the year, and they won enough in the playoffs to keep winning. And that's what you got to do. You have to get hot at the end of the year. You know, you feel sorry for those teams that, you know, they just get it. They don't get hot at the end of the year. They might have had a big winning streak in the first part of the season or in the middle of the season, and that's the way it happens. And that's unfortunate because you know, I don't. It's hard to say if a better team should have been in it, but they didn't win. I mean, that's the thing. You know, you go by your one loss record, and if you win the most games, you're there. Sometimes you just got to get in the playoffs. That's all. Just make the playoffs, and that's it. So if you just make the playoffs, you're good for most part during the season. And Aaron, let's talk. You and I talk a little bit about teams getting in the playoffs, making. Would you say, were there any teams that left out that didn't make the playoffs you think should have been in it or should be there right now? That's the thing. You know, we'll talk about that. Should there some of the teams like Chicago, they would have had to beat the Tigers to get in the playoffs or just, you know, get – I guess win more, that's for sure, to find out. Well, right now, let's go to the phones. We've got Victor on the line. Victor, how you doing?
And good afternoon. How are you?
Okay, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing all right, but I'm a little bit scared about the Giants. I was hoping the Cardinals would get in just because of the travel.
Yep, that's a long way to travel between for the teams, for both teams. You know, the travel goes both ways. But I like San Francisco. But you know, you have to be impressed. San Francisco has a very good bullpen. Their bullpen has been solid all year, even though their number one guy Brian Wilson is out now. And two of their best relievers aren't in the field, but yet that's still a very good lesson of our function of the good relieving staff they have, which is very good.
And they also showed they could put together some offense. I mean, 9-0 in the last game.
Yes.
So even though they say they're not a real good offensive team, I mean, any team that could put up 9 runs. If they did it once, they sure have the capabilities of doing it again. That means they must have some speed in their team, which the Tigers lack. But as far as the pitching, I think the Tigers' starting pitching will pull them through, but I'm worried about the bullpen, and I'm worried about our offense getting hot.
Yeah, you have to be worried about those two things. That's for sure. The starting pitching is probably the best in baseball, but the bullpen is shaky at times, and the hitting has been good, not great. It's been inconsistent for most of the year, so there is a problem to be had, and hopefully, you know, the Lions, the Tigers will play over.
Oh, you did have to mention that bad word.
Yeah, that slipped in.
But we're not going to talk about
we won't talk about that.
I don't want to have the men in the clean white coats come and take me away because I'd have to find too small a straitjacket.
Yeah, that was a tough game for the Lions last night. Yeah. We just, they just, that was one of those Freudian slips. Just.
Oh, yeah, sure it was. You have a great day and always a pleasure talking to you.
Okay, thanks, Victor. Yes, we didn't mean to mention the Lions, but since I happened to mention the Lions, actually Aaron made me do it. He made me mention the Lions.
Yeah, it was all me. I you know, held a weapon to your head and said, please talk about the Lions' loss.
Yeah, it was a tough loss last night. I mean, 13 to 7, and they score. They get their score on basically the last player in the last 30 seconds, minute of the game. And, of course, they totally shut down Calvin Johnson. He couldn't get anything done. That was a little bit surprising because you always think that 6'5 receiver with great athletic skills, he should be able to go up and get the ball. But, boy, they always cover him front and back these days. They used two people on him, and it was really tough on him. And they laid some good licks on him, too.
Yeah, I mean, Tillman, he kept him in check the whole night. Mm-hmm. Tillman did a great job, and, you know, like you said, they got their last score basically at the end of the game like that, and, you know, it was pretty much over by then anyway. That game should have been 28-13 Detroit. I mean, I don't even want to look at the stats. I mean, it's just frustrating how many times they were in the red zone and they couldn't score anything.
Yeah, that was.
You know, Bell drops it, you know, on the 1 yard line trying to, you know, leap in.
Yes.
You know, I like the, I appreciate the effort.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can't be doing that down there. And they got to score points. Is Michigan State playing for the Detroit Lions? They're not scoring any points. I mean, if they could score points, this team would be great.
It would be. But unfortunately, like you say, they don't score any points. They're a good team, a good offensive team. Somehow, they've got to get the ball in the end zone somehow by hook or crook. They've got to score points for sure. But that's the Lions' fate this year. And, you know, they just can't seem to get it done. Hey, give us a call. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR. We come your way Monday through Friday from 1:05 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. So call us up. Talk sports with us right here on AM 870. Well, we got a caller on the line who wants to talk about hockey. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, Earl.
Hi.
It's Camille. I was calling. I went to the game on Friday with Michigan State in Niagara.
Yes.
And I just wanted to, you know, thank you for that. Being able to go to the game. Me and my daughter went, and that was the first time we ever been to a hockey game. So we don't know anything about hockey, so we were pretty excited. But one question that we had, and I thought maybe it would be a bad access, at the end of it, like, because they play, I think, three periods.
Yes.
At the end of the third period, Niagara didn't have a goalie, and we couldn't understand, like, why did that happen?
Oh, they usually, when it's a close game, the team will pull the goalie at the end. If they're trailing by one goal, usually they're playing trailing by a goal. When the team that's trailing, they'll pull their goalie and give themselves an extra shooter. So that's what happens at the end. Usually the team that's trailing will pull their goalie and try to get another goal. Or at least they have another goal score in the lineup. Hopefully, they can get a goal without the other team, like without Michigan State scoring again. So they're going to try all they can. And that's what teams usually do. They pull that goalie in the third period if they're trailing.
Oh, okay. Because they really like threw us for a loop. We're like, what are they doing? But we appreciate that.
Okay, thank you. Glad you had a good time.
All right,
okay, thank you. We'll talk to you later, Camille. And that's talking a little bit of hockey here with us. And you're a big hockey guy, Aaron. Have you been to a game yet, or is it still too early for you?
It's still too early. I got all season. We got next till next spring. You know, there's 40 some games or whatever. I forget the exact number, but that's a long season. It's just a walk away from here.
Okay, so you're gonna wait. I mean, some people. I might have to get you over there because we may need you to talk a little hockey with us here. We have to make you our hockey expert.
Yeah, that wouldn't be bad. Maybe when Michigan comes to town here, you know, maybe that's where I'll go in there.
So you're waiting for the big games.
Yeah, you know, the big ones.
Okay. I see. I got your card now. I got your number now. You just want to go to the big games.
You know, I got to take advantage of it. You know, got to use the system.
Okay. Well, tell us about the Tigers. Are you going to go down to the World Series at all?
I mean, I guess if tickets were cheaper prices, sure. I unfortunately won't be able to make it to the World Series, but I mean, I like the Tigers' chances. I mean, if this starting rotation plays like they've been, I mean, they're going to be tough to beat. If they can get into the seventh or maybe, you know, Verlander, you know, for the most part, I mean, you know, he's proven all season to easily get into the seventh and most likely the eighth and even finish the whole game.
Yeah.
You know, in the playoffs, so I don't know if they'll do that because their bullpen has been pretty good. So don't bring in Valverde, and you should be okay. You know, they got, Scherzer for game four. So assuming that, you know, the other two guys, Anibal Sanchez and I forget who the other guy is off the top of my head.
Fister?
Yeah, Fister. So if those guys, two guys come to play too, come to pitch – I like Detroit's chances. Assuming they can get one in San Francisco, if they get one in San Fran, I definitely like their chances coming back home.
You know, it's one thing to say. I mean, the players have gotten plenty of rest. I mean, they've been resting, getting ready for the series. Do you wonder at all if maybe Verlander's had too much rest now during this waiting period and some of the other pitchers? Because now they've had to wait for San Francisco for that series to settle between San Francisco and St. Louis. So now you wonder sometimes, is there a little rust involved?
Yeah, sure, that's possible. But, you know, they've been – I forgot what the term they use. They play like they're they play against a practice team or, you know, some sort of team where they kind of, you know – they keep loose. They keep kind of in shape. You know, I can guarantee you they're at their practices keeping in tune with themselves. You know, they're sure they're not pitching full throttle or anything like that. But, you know, I might expect them to come out a little bit, shaky for the first game or something like that. But it's the World Series. Your adrenaline's pumping. You're ready to go. It's just a matter of staying focused. I don't think it hasn't been that long. So I expect them to be fine. You know, maybe on the other end for the Giants, you know, they've been playing consistently and they don't even get a break. I mean, they get a one-day break and that's it.
Yeah.
You know.
That could be an advantage or it could be a disadvantage.
Yeah, you just never know. But I think Detroit's, you know, they're skilled enough and they got enough leadership to that's not a factor for them.
Yes, I wonder about the rest of the play. After Cabrera and Fielder, you have to wonder about the rest of the lineup. And basically, Jackson is okay. Those are their best three hitters. So you do worry about some of the other players in that Tiger lineup.
Yeah, but I think for the most part, when they've needed hits, guys have come through. I mean, you know, during the season, you could be like, you cross your fingers, hope someone would hit the baseball besides Cabrera and Fielder. But you know, the other guys have come through. Some guys you that weren't coming through maybe during the season at certain times, but. Whatever the reason is, I think just, you know, everyone's kind of clicking on the right tune. You know, I think they have leadership in the locker room. It just kind of, you just kind of feel that vibe, you know, watching it on TV, or if you're even at the, lucky enough to be at the games, it just seems to be more energy. You know, everyone just seems to be into it. But if, yeah, you're right. If for some reason these other guys in the lineup can't hit anything, oh man, that's going to spell trouble for the Tigers.
It will, that's for sure. Now, you know, Saturday is going to be a great day. You have a World Series game. You'll also have Michigan State playing Wisconsin. So that makes it a great day for sports fans. Your team's in the World Series, and the Spartans are struggling, but they'll be playing a big game against Wisconsin. How do you look at that Wisconsin game? I was just over at our press conference today with the coach, Mark D'Antonio, and he knows it's going to be an extremely tough game. How do you look at it?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a tough game. It's obviously an away game, correct, just to verify? Yep.
Yeah.
You know, that's a tough place to play. I mean, I don't care who you are. That's a tough place to play for whatever reason. Is this an afternoon game? I forget.
3:30.
3:30, okay. Yeah. You know, it's going to be a tough game to play. Wisconsin has been up and down, too. They haven't been consistent as, oh, they're just going to run the table and win that division. There's been games. It's just like, what? Who is this Wisconsin, the team that we thought they were? But, you know, Michigan State's been that way, too. So, you know, I think there's some blood from last year that, you know, Michigan State has or Wisconsin has against Michigan State that they would like to redeem. It's hard to say how it's going to go. If Michigan State plays like they did Saturday against Michigan, they're not going to win. I mean, that's just simple.
Yeah, Mark got a lot of questions about the offense, and basically, as he said, the offense basically is the same as it was last year, which means it's a pretty good offense, but the personnel are different. And that's the thing that fans need to recognize, that the personnel is different from the personnel of last year, and these guys just haven't been able to pick it up and do all the things that last year's athletes do. I mean, the team changes so radically from year to year, so that makes it really tough if you're a coach.
Yeah, it does. You're right. I mean, this isn't the same team as last year, not even close on the offensive side. I mean, you lost a lot of key players. I mean, you lose a couple of your best wide receivers, and then you lose your main guy and your quarterback, your leader of the team, of the entire team, offense and defense. Yeah, you know, there's going to be some adjustments. To be honest, I think we put way too much pressure on this team going into the season. And maybe they felt it, and maybe now they're even feeling it more because they're not playing up to their par or what we think they should be playing to. But the reality is, you know, these guys are young. It's just these group of guys. It's just taking them longer to adapt to the game and learn the game and learn the system. You know, next year might be a different story. I don't know, but. You know what? You know, sure, there's been moments you're like, why are they doing that? But the reality is they're young. You know, we got to cut them some slack. We gave them way too much pressure based off players, what they did
exactly
last year. They're not the same players last year. We can't do that. So.
Exactly. I mean, they won those back-to-back 11-game seasons, and everyone sort of thought, I mean, I don't know how many people thought they'd do it again, but I think it was in a lot of people's back of their mind that this could be, they could have a third season at 11 wins, you know, or somewhere be in the area. But it didn't happen that way, and right now they're sitting at 4-4, and they've lost all these three games by a total of 6 points. So they've had some very close games. Hey, we want to thank you all for listening today. Thank you all for calling. Invite you to come back and join us tomorrow right here on AM 870 WKAR. You're listening to Michigan State University Radio, AM 870 WKAR East Lansing. We come your way Monday through Friday from 1:05 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. If you've never called us before, we want you to come back and join us tomorrow right here on AM 870 WKAR. Have yourself a safe and pleasant evening.
From NPR News in.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.